Good morning. Welcome to Senate Finance. Today is Monday, March 5th, 2018. The time is 9 a.m. I'm Co-Chairman Anna McKinnon. With me this morning, Co-Chairman Hoffman.
Good morning.
Vice Chairman Bishop.
Good morning.
Senator Michicki.
Good morning.
Senator Stevens.
Good morning.
Senator Olson.
Good morning, Madam Chair.
I hope everyone had a great weekend. Is there anything to come before the committee before we begin? We have two items on today's agenda, the State Assessment Review Board, Mr. Brad Pickett, and then SB 86, the Alaska Railroad Corporation land. If I could direct your attention to your confirmation binder and invite, Mr. Pickett, are you online? He's in the Matsu LIO.
Good morning, Madam Chair. Yes, I'm online.
Thank you, sir. Briefly, we are looking at confirmation to the State Assessment Review Board under 4356040. This board consists of five persons appointed by the governor to serve at the pleasure of the governor, each of whom must be knowledgeable of assessment procedures. Specifically, the department shall assess property for the tax levied under 4356010B and AS 2945080 on property used or committed by contract or other agreement for use for the pipeline transportation of gas or unrefined oil or for the production of gas or unrefined oil at its full and true value as of January 1st of the assessment year. Mr. Pickett, do you have opening comments about your qualifications and why you'd like to serve on this board?
Good morning, Madam Chair. Yes, I do. I'll give you just a little bit of background information on myself. For the record, I'm Brad Pickett, Matsu Borough Assessor, and thank you for the opportunity speaking with you this morning. I'm honored to be before you and have been nominated to sit on this board. I would like to thank Governor Walker for nominating me and all of the folks that have helped make this process go as smoothly as it has so far. My family and I moved up to Alaska in 1998. We had two kids. And we realized this is where we belong. We fell in love with the state, and we've never regretted our choice to come up here. It's been very good to us. We now have three grandchildren that have joined us. And fortunately, all of the family is real close here in Matsu. I've worked at the Matsu Borough for now 16 years, and eight of those years I was the commercial appraiser. And for the past 4 years, I've been the assessor. This background is going to help me to make fair and equitable decisions sitting on this board, and I think it's going to be a good fit for me. I've got the background doing the cost approach, which is how we'll value the oil and gas property, as well as being the assessor. I've spent a great deal of time before our assessment review board, so I have the background there. And I feel it's a privilege to serve on the State Assessment Review Board. Not only will I learn a lot, but it's going to give me the opportunity to give back to the community and to the state of Alaska that has given so much to me and my family. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Pickett. Are there questions from committee members? Mr. Pickett, this is Senator McKinnon. I have one. Is the Matsu Assembly or its government in a lawsuit or has joined in challenging FERC for a movement of the pipeline location? Sorry, I'm grasping for words. I'm recalling a lawsuit that Matsu may be partaking in that is asking FERC to look at a new destination point for the gas pipeline.
Madam Chair, yes. I don't know that it's actually a lawsuit at this point, but they did ask that the Regulatory Commission of Alaska review Point McKenzie again as a viable location for the new pipeline. And as of last week at the assembly meeting, the attorney said that the Regulatory Commission of Alaska has granted that they will review that as a possible site.
I believe that may have been filed with FERC. The federal regulatory agency, do you know?
Madam Chair, yes, that is correct.
Mr. Pickett, is there a conflict of interest for you to be employed by a mayor who is asking for a new destination point and then reviewing the tariffs on the corridor for a pipeline?
Madam Chair, I don't believe it's a conflict. Currently, the oil and gas property is a very small portion of MATSU's overall assessment role. We have a role of over $12 billion, and currently the oil and gas is around $10 million. And I don't believe having a new destination here will add any additional conflict. I can make my decisions based on the information before me and do a fair job of it.
Mr. Pickett, thank you for placing your name before us. I don't mean to be disparaging in any way. Can you talk to us about your experience? I know you gave us years. Can you give us any specific projects that you worked on that might be similar to a pipeline tariff?
Madam Chair, I have not done any evaluations for pipelines with the exception of water utilities. And I don't know that they're comparable. They're much smaller in nature. I did value the water and sewer utility for the new prison out at Point McKenzie. But again, it's probably not comparable to these properties in nature. However, I do have a strong background in the cost approach. And truthfully, the dollars don't really matter. It's the principle is the same. I understand depreciation very well, and I have had a great deal of experience valuing properties that are going to be valued with the same methodology as the oil and gas.
Questions from committee members? Mr. Pickett, thank you for joining us today.
Thank you.
Brief at ease. We're back on the record. Senator Bishop, thank you for those thoughts offline. I just want to correct the record. This is an assessment of the valuation of the pipeline, not the tariffs that are on there, though the assessment does contribute to the tariff eventually, but the assessment is for the physical structure. With that, we'll take a brief at ease while we sign the paperwork. Senator Bishop, did you have a
motion?
Senator Bishop.
In accordance with AS 39.05.080, the Finance Committee reviewed the following and recommends the appointment be forwarded to a joint session for consideration. State Assessment Review Board, Mr. Brad Pickett. This does not reflect an intent by any of the members to vote for or against the confirmation of the individual during any further sessions.
Is there objection? Seeing and hearing none, that motion passes. We'll take a brief at ease while we sign the paperwork. Brief at ease. We're back on the record. The next item before us is Senate Bill 86. It's an act relating to the sale or other disposal, leasing, or encumbrance of Alaska Railroad Corporation land and providing for an effective date. I'd like to invite Senator John Coghill as well as Reneva Moss, staff to Senator Coghill, to the microphone for an introduction of the bill. Welcome to Finance.
Good morning, Madam Chair, members of the committee. Senator John Coghill from the North Pole Fairbanks area. Thank you for hearing Senate Bill 86. With me is Reneva Moss, who has done most of the research on this. But I can tell you where it started from. Certainly up in my neck of the woods, the railroad has a big part to play. The Port of Anchorage, the Port of Seward, supplies the interior in big, big ways. For a lot of years, we had the refinery up there that created a lot of two-way traffic on the railroad. But it's also been true that I've been somewhat critical of the railroad in some of their leasing policies, and I've been in touch with the board off and on down through the years. Because of that familiarity with the board at the railroad, this issue came up on the ability to dispose of land, put it into private hands. And so Senate Bill 86 attempts to give them the right over a three-year period to deal with real estate that right now they're barred from doing. So Senate Bill 86 actually repeals a provision that bars them from selling real estate, gives them a three-year window to sell that real estate. The benefit to Alaska, I think, will be great, certainly in the interior. I'll tell you how the interior will benefit. There are a couple of parcels of land that are on leased land, and being able to buy the land makes it financeable, making it leased land probably takes it out of that public domain for both buying and selling, plus property tax. So I think this helps the private economy in many ways. There's an area, for example, in Healy that I've known about for a lot of years where they leased land for a long term, and where houses are built on it. We actually did a law several years ago that allowed them 95-year leases. But up beyond that point, they're not able to sell it. I think this would allow that to be put into private hands. There's probably a number of other areas, and you'll hear that from the railroad board themselves, and I think we have some pretty good testimony today. Probably the goal for me is to not kick the door all the way open, but allow them to have a nimble method to bargain with potential landholders. This will not allow them to sell the right-of-way, so I don't think we have to worry about that. But what it will allow them to do is to bargain certain areas of land up and down the railroad from its point of entry south to its point of termination north to look at possibilities that they could get a little cash for running the railroad, which right now they're having their own struggles, just like all of us are, let a little property into the tax rolls and allow a little development in some areas where right now it's just not able to happen. So I was convinced that this is a good approach, and what we tried to do was keep it fairly narrow. Madam Chair, one of the things that we did look at originally was could we design a bill that said specific parcels. But that became somewhat restrictive, so we tried to figure out a way, how do we let them demonstrate to us their ability to take these pieces of property, put them into good use, and value for them, value for the state of Alaska. So having a tight time frame, we thought about 2 years, but because of some commercial transactions, 2 years might be a little tight. So we thought 3 years would be sufficient. Beyond that, I think the legislature really needs to kind of keep an eye on how they're doing, what they're doing. And then the other thing that we put in this was those that have had long-term leases, we wanted to have them have the first right of refusal. And that is an issue that will travel along with this bill. Madam Chair, it's just fairly simple, pretty straightforward. It's allowing the board to put some of their lands that otherwise would not be productive into productive hands.
Are there questions from committee members on the intent of the bill? Senator Olson.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. Excuse me. Senator Coghill, over the years that I've been here and involved with some of the issues that have come up with the railroad, there's obviously a tension that has gone on between the railroad, the corporation, as well as some of the landowners that are in the area. How much opposition have you found to this as you start to liquidate some of this?
On this particular issue, Madam Chair, Senator Olson, not much. The issues really come from right-of-way issues along mostly the more populated corridors, and I think that is something that you're going to hear about from time to time. But on this particular issue, I haven't had that pushback.
Another quick question, Madam
Senator
Chair.
Olson.
As you look at the funds that are going to be the revenue that's coming from the sales, where do those funds go to? Since the state supposedly owns the corporation, is the state going to be having it go to the general fund, or is the Alaska Railroad going to be the sole decider on what they're going to do with their money?
Madam Chair, that is an excellent question and one that we searched out ourselves, Senator Olson. So we looked at the original act that brought the railroad to Alaska from the feds, and Renee Lamas, my chief of staff, actually went back and looked at the congressional record on it to show that those are intended to be used for the railroad use. But I think this is a good time to have that discussion because they just haven't sold that much land to date, and it's not been a huge question until we open this question up. And I would like to have that put to rest. I think that it would be best used for the railroad because that would be the purpose of it. It would put property in the tax rolls that I think would be beneficial to Alaskans. So, Madam Chair, if you don't mind, I can have Ms. Moss give what research she's found on this.
Certainly. Are there other questions from committee members on why we're doing the bill? Ms. Moss, if we could start with the differences, or would you like to do a sectional of this research?
Madam Chair, I can tell you the changes that were made in resources as I'm going through the sectional.
Certainly.
Sections 1, 3, 6, 8, 10, and 12 simply eliminate the statutory requirement for legislative approval of land transactions affecting utility corridors, land leases, or land disposal if it is a land sale or lease longer than 95 years. Madam Chair, Sections 2, 4, 7, 9, 11, and 13 were added in the resource CS, and they repeal sections 3, 6, 8, 10, and 12 in 3 years and reinstate the statutory requirement for legislative approval. Section 12 requires the right of first refusal for current leases, and Madam Chair, we'll be recommending that the committee consider an amendment that would give the leasee 90 days to exercise that right. Section 12, the verbiage that allows for first right of refusal was added in the Resources Committee. So the two changes that were made was the 3-year sunset and the right of first refusal. Section 5 reenacts legislative approval required in 3 years. That section of law, AS 4240-285, is repealed in Section 15. So Section 5 reenacts it in 3 years. Section 14 is conforming language. Section 16 gives Sections 1, 3, 6, 8, 10, and 12 eliminating legislative approval in an immediate effective date. And Section 17 sunsets the elimination of legislative approval in 3 years.
Are there questions on the structure of the bill? Ms. Moss, could you give us a historical perspective or other comments on the bill?
Certainly, Madam Chair. Just to address Senator Olson's concern, I wanted to read to you under state operation of public law 97468, which was enacted on January 14, 1983. Revenues generated by the state-owned railroad shall be retained and managed by the state-owned railroad for railroad and related purposes. Madam Chair, there are different viewpoints on this, so I went back and found the congressional record under which Senator Ted Stevens explained the Railroad Act. And in this, he said that the public law specifies that the state-owned railroad shall retain and manage its own revenues. The purpose of this provision is to avoid the need for annual appropriations by the state for the railroad. That's a historical perspective of the funds. It is state land, but under state law and federal law, the proceeds are designated directly to the railroad, and under state law, there is a separate accounting system set up by the railroad.
Other questions from committee members? Senator Olson, followed by Senator Stevens.
I guess the question that I really have is that we are all going through difficult times financially right now, the state of Alaska, the railroad. The state of Alaska, though, has a revenue stream that comes in. If you go ahead and sell a one-time asset, that's only one-time money for the railroad to pull them out of this situation. How do you know that 5 or 10 years from now, when they have less land, that they're not going to be in a cash-strapped situation as well?
Through the chair, Senator Olson, that question is probably better answered by the CEO and the chairman of the board. However, the reason for the three-year sunset is to give them an opportunity to prove that they are good property managers.
No further questions, Madam Chair.
Senator Stevens.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Actually, Senator Olson pretty much asked a similar question I was going to ask about making sure that the monies that are derived from sale aren't simply used to run the day-to-day operation of the railroad so that a few years down the road the railroad has no land and has used those funds just for the operation. So pretty similar to what the Senator asked, and I'd appreciate that answer in due course. Thank you.
Thank you. Ms. Moss, did you have other comments?
Madam Chair, the only comment I would make is that I've been sitting at the table with Senator Coghill when he's had same concerns and lengthy discussions with the railroad.
Senator Hoffman.
Thank you, Madam Chair. What we're talking about is non-corridor real estate portfolio. How much land are we talking about that the railroad owns in this non-corridor real estate portfolio, and I wonder if we can get a map of the locations. Do we know the acreage?
Through the chair, Senator Hoffman, they were appropriated about 36,000 acres by federal law. About half of that is used in the corridor, so you're looking at a little under 18,000 acres of land. And I can provide you with a map. There is a map on the website for the Finance Committee, but I'll make sure you get a copy of it.
And do we have, Madam Chair, do we have an idea of what that acreage is valued at?
Through the chair, Senator Hoffman, I don't have a value, but there are people here who can give you an estimate at least.
Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Moss. Thank you, Senator Hoffman. A follow-up on that. We have had some, is there any encumbrances on the titles of the property that was transferred from the federal government? I'm thinking of the university and the lawsuit where the university started to move through land and then were sued regarding leases and lease. Not necessarily similar to this, but somewhat similar in that it was federal land that was eventually transferred to them from the state.
Madam Chair, I'll reserve an answer from the authorities from the railroad.
Thank you. Other questions for the sponsor of Senate Bill 86? Thank you for introducing your bill today to Senate Finance. I'd like to invite Bill O'Leary, the President and CEO of the Alaska Railroad Corporation, as well as John Cook, Chairman of the Board of Directors for the Alaska Railroad, to the microphone. Mr. O'Leary, if you could place yourself on the record and provide opening comments on Senate Bill 86.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. For the record, my name is Bill O'Leary. I'm the President and Chief Executive Officer of the Alaska Railroad, and I'd actually like to defer to our board chair, John Cook, who's with me today, for the opening comments on this, if that is acceptable.
Mr. Cook, if you could put yourself on the record and then please provide opening comments.
Thank you, Madam Chair. My name is John Cook. I am Chair of the Board of Directors of the Alaska Railroad Corporation, and I'm coming down today from Salcha, Alaska. So thank you, Madam Chair and Finance Committee members today for your time. You know, the railroad, I've now been on the board since late 2009. I've served on the Real Estate Committee the entirety of my tenure on the board, and have served as chair now going on my third year. You know, the railroad has prided itself from an operational perspective by of being self-sufficient and self-sustaining and not having to come to this body for operational monies. We have come, and you've been very generous in the past regarding capital monies for certain projects and infrastructure items, but we've been able to maintain self-sufficiency and my predecessors before me. We've faced some headwinds in the last 10 years in terms of you know, economic decline, especially on the freight side. We've seen freight revenues decline from a peak of $100 million per annum in 2012 to an unaudited figure for 2017 of $72 million. So we've had a 28% decline in freight revenues driven largely by the closure of Flint Hills Refinery and the termination of a Usabelli export coal. So, in addition, just to general economic slowdowns in the North Slope and other areas. So, you know, like you, we've struggled, you know, with our budgets. We've remained profitable, but we've struggled trying to offset the declines in revenue. And, you know, we've gone through, in my tenure on the board, three restructurings. We've cut 300 employees from a peak of about 800 employees to 500 employees. We've restructured the way that we've done business in terms of reducing freight service to 5 days a week to Fairbanks. We flattened the organization. From a cost perspective, we've taken a lot of the low-hanging fruit out, and there just is not a lot left on the cost side. So we've tried to keep an eye on the ball on revenue. And one of the things over the years that the federal government did when the railroad was established in the state was lucky to be able to have that, is that the real estate endowment. And the real estate endowment was given in large part to provide revenues to shield the railroad through some of the economic cycles that Alaska's gone through. And we've got a very, very long railroad at 500-plus miles with minimal density and not a large, you know, population and very cyclical commodities markets. So the real estate portfolio historically in the form of lease revenues has provided a significant and material revenue stream to the railroad. Over the last 10 years, the real estate, you know, net income has provided 86% on average of total net income. So it's not only critical to making sure that we're able to operate the company and invest in necessary capital, you know, CapEx. It's just it's an absolute must for being able to shield us through these tough times. But coming in from a private sector real estate perspective, I've always thought that we've kind of had one hand tied behind our back with a leasing-only policy. There's just certain lands that are not conducive to a lease policy. Parcels that are remote are a lot harder to finance on a lease basis as opposed to a fee simple basis. Very small parcels of property that are de minimis that maybe don't make a lot of sense, or other ones. And then maybe just large commercial projects as well. There's a lot of times where just from a financing perspective, it's just not practical to have a lease-only policy. So, you know, we've looked at this in terms of being able to have the ability to sell land like all other state agencies do, and to do so without legislative approval. And it's not that we don't feel that we would not receive legislative approval. It just, it slows things down in terms of being reactive to the market. You know, and secondly, I guess it's very hard to predict what transactions will walk through your door. A lot of these small pieces that are unbuildable or irregular, I couldn't tell you which transactions would come through were to pass as policy, but we don't need to own 2,000 and 3,000 square foot parcels of property if they're better served by adjacent landowners. Similarly, you'll hear from one of our potential customers today about an exciting project in Healy, which if you would have told me about it 6 months ago, I would have never guessed that a project this exciting and of this magnitude would be one that they come to the Alaska Railroad. So a question had been raised with regard to what we intend to do with the proceeds of the sales. And I would tell you that our goal is to grow the lease stream of income from the railroad real estate portfolio. So we would like to take the proceeds of these sales, reinvest it in the leased properties, and increase the value of those properties. So right now, we don't have the cash to invest in things like roads and utilities that a developer would normally do before they go and either lease or sell that property. So by improving our property, we're going to be able to raise the value of that property and increase the income stream. The three-year sunset is a demonstration period, which will give us a chance to show you that we can responsibly sell property, reinvest those proceeds, and grow this lease portfolio. So that's about all I have in terms of what we're looking to do and you know, needing your help to help get us over the finish line.
Questions from committee members? Senator Olson asked about, or Senator Hoffman asked about the value of the 18,000 acres that is currently under the proposal in front of us that would be available for sale into the private sector. Do you have a valuation on that?
Through the chair, Senator Hoffman, I do not have a value on that. It would be very expensive to go and appraise all those parcels. I will tell you that the value of the 18,000 acres that the railroad has, I can tell you it's for sure in the hundreds of millions of dollars. There's absolutely no doubt about that in my mind. But in terms of coming up with the value on all 18,000 acres, we'd have to appraise all that. And I can't give you any number other than it's an extremely large number.
Senator Hoffman.
Thank you, Madam Chair. When was the last time that the railroad came to the legislature for approval to sell land, and how much land has been sold during the last 5 years, if you have not that knowledge available?
Through the chair, Senator Hoffman, I do have a list of transactions. I will tell you, in the last 5 years, the only sales that have occurred, actually, there's
Mr. Cook,
been none.
Yeah, if I might, in the packet that was provided from the railroad, there is the question, has the legislature ever approved a sale? Yes, many times, but most recently they're mostly transfers, like with the municipality of Anchorage, with Eklutna, with DOT as a corporation. So, but we have had that. I know that you know that, Senator Hoffman.
And the other question that I have is, what process would you go through to identify parcels that are up for sale, or would you leave that to individuals coming up and interested in parcels, and would that disposal process be a competitive bid?
Through the chair, Senator Hoffman, yeah, two things. Yes, one, we have had sales, as you'll see in the packet. Most of those are to DOT and other municipal entities, so there has been a history of doing that over the years. What you'll see that's missing, other than a transaction with Eklutna, which is a little bit of a different deal there. There's been very few with the private sector. So in terms of identifying parcels, you know, some of these, I guess, we are familiar with just from our own arm markets in terms of vacant land. So we've got lands in Fairbanks, for example, a subdivision called Chena Landings that are just, the lots are right on the Chena River. They're south-facing. They're just too shallow to be used for commercial purposes. So those are ones that we know the highest and best use is single family residential. And so we've put those up for sale now. So it'll be a combination of identifying parcels that have not been monetized at all and seeing if a sales approach would work on those, and also letting the market come to us. I mean, the transaction in Healy that you'll hear about today, at least the one transaction, the potential customer came to us, not the other way around. So I think a lot of it's just saying, guys, we're open for business where it makes sense. In terms of your other question regarding pricing, we do not only with existing statutes, and this wouldn't change it, we have to have a best interest finding that it's in the best interest of the railroad, but we also have to assure fair market value on all sales through either an appraisal or a competitive bid process. So between the public notice, the appraisal, the competitive bid process, you know, we're assured that we're going to get, when we do enter into a sales transaction, that we're going to get the top dollar. One other thing I'd also add is we've talked a little bit about the right of first refusal for customers that are currently leasing land. And I will tell you, it's not the intention of myself, the board, or management to sell land from out underneath any existing leaseholder. So it's not our policy to do that. I don't intend to pursue any transactions unless that lessee wishes to explore a purchase of their land and it makes sense to do so.
So,
Senator Hoffman.
So it is possible for the railroad under this legislation to negotiate a sale and that land would not be subject to a competitive bid process?
Through the chair, Senator Hoffman, yes, that is absolutely the case. It's that way in statutes, existing statutes right now. So we were not changing anything there. It would either be appraisal, again, where you have a third-party review or competitive bid. So either one would work. And again, there is a public noticing requirement that goes out to the public. So any of these transactions will be advertised to the public.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Senator Machicki, followed by Senator Stevens.
No, just a couple. The senator didn't get the answer that it looks to me like there has not been any land sold in the last 5 years since the last was 2009. So I thought that was kind of important. Couple of questions. So the competitive, I'm kind of worried about it the other way. First of all, just your logic on the need for the board having the tools similar to DOT and the Alaska Mental Health Trust Authority was to make your land so that you had some funding to improve other land and make it more leasable. But why would you be looking at a piece of property that was leased in the first place? I'm a little worried that the first right of refusal could actually end up with a loss of value for the railroad in the sale. Why would you be looking at property that's currently leased?
Through this chair, Senator Machicki, it's an excellent question and one that I'm happy to answer. One of the things, you know, as the railroad and being a public corporation is that we have to be responsive to not only our tenants, but to you all and to the public. You know, some things that have happened over time, predating some of my arrival on the board, is that, you know, the federal government had extremely low lease rates when they came in. I mean, you could lease nice parcels in Anchorage for $50 a year or some really nominal sum. You know, when the state took over, it again attempted to obtain, you know, fair market value. That's a little bit misleading because while the appraisal's fair market value, there was pressure put on, you know, this body in its previous forms and the railroad to limit those increases. And I certainly understand the need for that in terms of businesses being able to provide for cash flow. But we have a process where you reappraise lands every 5 years. So what's happened is that many of our leases are subject to caps. I think all the new ones are and many of the old ones that it's about can only go up no more than 25%. And it might be 35% in any five-year period. So when you have a lease that started at a very low rate under federal terms and it's subject to this cap, we have leases in Anchorage that are literally, we have an 8% standard lease in Anchorage or Fairbanks anywhere else. It's and some of these, because of these caps, are at a 4% lease rate. So if I have a customer that is leasing at a 4% lease rate and they want to buy that land fee simple and I can convert 50 cent on the dollar money to 100 cent on the dollar money, I would be really remiss in my, you know, duties if I didn't consider that transaction. We've actually got folks that are willing to do so. So that's the scenario, one of the only scenarios that I can think of where we would look at selling lease land to somebody that wants to convert a lease at less than that 8% rate to full value.
Senator Machicki.
Thanks for that. I'm thinking more with the lack of a competitive bid process. I mean, so you don't have a vision at all of any, like the Alaska Mental Health Trust Authority Land Office. Well, they have both types of sales. Of course, you can approach them for a sale, which would then be noticed as well, but then they have the competitive bid. What if you had an offer from someone on a piece of property and you don't go out for competitive bid and you don't know other than the public notice, are you locked into a sale price with the public notice or would someone be able to come in and say, okay, that's great that you're selling this property for $30,000 an acre, but I have a business plan, I can support 60. Are you locked into that sale price?
Well, you know, again, part of part of, I guess, what I, through the chair, Senator Machicki, part of what, you know, we talked about before in terms of selling existing lease holdings is I do not intend to pursue any policy that would sell land that's currently leased unless it's from the existing leaseholder. You know, if we come to terms, that doesn't mean that somebody can't put an offer in, I guess, but I wouldn't intend to, we don't intend to pursue those types of sales. If somebody was public noticed and somebody came in with another offer, I mean, I guess that would again, we're not locked in at that price. But we not only have that competitive bid process, again, there is a fair market value appraisal process, which on vacant land, I would assume a lot of times will be one of the ways that it'd be, you know, utilized if there's no clamor for the lots. So,
Senator Machicki,
so could you clarify that answer? If you had an offer from an entity that wanted to purchase a piece of property and you went out for public notice, is there the opportunity for the railroad to change its mind legally to a higher bidder at that point? Because what we're doing is we're streamlining the process. You'll no longer have, I mean, for all intents and purposes, no longer have legislative oversight. And obviously, you're worried about being able to work between sessions. Does it go to the highest bidder? Or are you locked into some lower value on selling railroad land?
No, I mean, again, if we, you know, I don't think we're going to enter into any transactions where we don't think that we're receiving you know, full value, but through the chair, Senator Machicki, it would depend, I guess, on how, you know, the purchase and sale agreement's written as well. So, you know, you enter into a transaction with somebody, I just don't see if somebody put an offer in, if it hadn't gone through the competitive bid process and that process is closed, then I'd say the process is closed, unless there's something in the purchase and sale agreement that contradicts that. But again, I would see, like we've done up in Fairbanks on vacant land, is we've advertised that property for sale, and we kept the period of time open on some of the lots for, you know, 2 to 3 weeks and advertised that and, you know, took offers in, and the highest offers are the ones that we, you know, intend to close. So, again, unless that purchase and sale agreement said, well, in the intervening time period, there's a way that if somebody puts a better offer in, we're going to take a look at that. That'd be the only scenario I could see where that would happen.
Senator Machicki.
Last one. You're just giving up a little tool here, and that's kind of what I'm getting to. And the tool is that you would have an excuse from the legislature if you were to, at the 11th hour, come in with a much higher bidder. If the legislature didn't approve the sale, then, of course, you couldn't execute that sale. You're giving up that tool. You're giving up that excuse for it to be someone else's fault, and you'd be somewhat locked in at that point. So that's my concern. I mean, that's my only concern. I understand what you want to do. It almost seems like it'd be best if there was a railroad's choice as to whether the railroad board approves or it goes to the legislature for final approval.
Yeah, through the chair, Senator Machicki, it is. I think that's frankly one of the reasons that you've never been approached is that there was a fear at the board level that there'd be a run on the land. You know, it's taken some time, I guess, coming from a different perspective, from the private sector perspective. You know, I just think, number one, I don't operate, I guess, from a position of fear, and I don't think most of our board members do. We really need to look at evolving, and it's up to us to make sure that we obtain, you know, as much as the market will bear and what's reasonable when we attempt to sell these lands. So I understand that the legislature could be an out, but at the same token, I've never had a problem saying no, and neither have any of our board members. So, you know, again, I think with this three-year sunset, 3 years isn't a lot of time in the real estate development world, but I think it's a reasonable amount of time to show you that we can, you know, that we can manage these sales and reinvest these proceeds, and I think it's a good balance that we struck with Senator Coghill in terms of being fair for a time period to prove this to you.
Senator Stevens.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I think I've heard the answer to this, but maybe just to clarify, I think I understand that the funds received from sales would not be used for day-to-day operations of the railroad, but in fact would be reinvested and would still be of great value to the railroad in the future. Is that true?
Through the chair, Senator Stevens, yes. Our intent is not to take, you know, this one-time money, which you're very right in pointing out it is one-time money, and using it on a one-time expense. We've already actually got a tentative award to put a road into the subdivision we're developing in Fairbanks. We haven't issued notice to proceed, but we've got that bid. It's been accepted, and we're hoping that can be one of the first projects that we use the proceeds for, which will help, you know, increase the value of those land holdings. So, no, you're absolutely, you heard correct that we intend to reinvest this in the real estate portfolio, and we intend, when the 3 years comes up, to come back and show you where we've invested those proceeds.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Senator Hoffman.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Regarding that parcel that you described, south-facing in Fairbanks, what is the intent of the board and the administration if this legislation does not pass regarding those parcels?
Through the chair, Senator Hoffman, we have actually, we went through the rezone and replat process. It's a very large piece, but we took a small chunk, about 13 acres, rezoned all of it from GU1 to multifamily occupancy and replatted about 10 lots. So we put those first 10 lots up for sale with a caveat that it's subject to this legislative authority, and in fact, if it doesn't pass, we have to refund the earnest money that's been put down by the three folks that have put in offers that have been accepted so far. So where we go from here, I don't know. I'm an optimist, so I'm thinking that we'll get this done, but we do have, you know, we've been very forthright in all of these instances that these sales, you know, won't be consummated unless we have the legislative authority to do so.
Well, from my viewpoint, it would seem that any investors would have went to the railroad, and the railroad would have come to the legislature and asked to sell that land prior to being it in limbo and having the legislature having to act in order to have those lands sold. And that is one of the reasons that I was asking what would happen if this legislation failed. And the second question, I guess, have you, as a board member, or has the administration had any other dialogues with other individuals or corporations to sell land if this legislation passes?
Through the chair, Senator Hoffman, again, a good question. And if you go through the list of transactions, you know, again, what you'll see is a real lack of private sector names on there, either individuals or corporations. And a lot of reasons for that. But I think, you know, like for the example, the subdivision in Fairbanks with individual homeowners, to go ahead and get legislation introduced and go through the House, the Senate, and the governor, it's a very daunting task for a lot of potential, you know, homeowners. There's a lot of land that you can, you know, a lot of land out there to invest in. And I think that, frankly, it's a very daunting task for, you know, a lot of folks. Not that it wouldn't be supported, but it's very intimidating to potential.
So your answer to the question is no, there are no other dialogues being held with other individuals or corporations for potential sale
through
this legislation?
Through the chair, Senator Hoffman, there have been, you know, specifically, you know, we've got several transactions that have been signed subject to this bill or that we're in discussions, you know, at. A lot of that's, again, been generated by this, you know, bill being introduced. But, you know, we have been we're always in discussions, but as far as firm deals, we've got the subdivision in Fairbanks and the hotel development in Healy, but we are in discussions with Yusevelli Coal Mine regarding Tri-Valley Subdivision, which has been something that's been an ongoing desire of Yusevelli for many years. We're in discussions with a native corporation in the Anchorage area regarding a potential land exchange, not a sale, and the municipality of Anchorage regarding some land at the port. So there are, and Department of Transportation, which is kind of an ongoing thing. Again, some trades, some sales. So yes, there are some that are being talked about as well.
Senator Hoffman.
And of these that you've mentioned, do you have an idea of the property value of these that you just discussed?
Yes. The exchange, not so much, the exchanges are, I don't really consider those, they don't really bring revenue into the corporation, so it's kind of just trading assets for assets unless there's a differential. But I would say that the land value of all these is, were we to sell out the first 10 lots at Chena Landings, sell the parcel in Healy, the parcel at the Port of Anchorage, you're somewhere close between $7 and $9 million.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Are there other questions from committee members? I have a series of questions, but I'm going to hold them so that we can open the public hearing and hear from Alaskans regarding this issue. Thank you, Mr. Cook, Mr. O'Leary. I don't think that we have anyone. Is there anyone here in Juneau wishing to testify on Senate Bill 86? The public hearing is open. Anyone in Juneau? Seeing and hearing none, going off net, Curtis McQueen, Eklutna Incorporation. Curtis, welcome to Senate Finance.
Good morning, Madam Chair and members of the committee. My name is Curtis McQueen. I am the CEO of Eklutna Inc. We represent the Eklutna Denina here in the Anchorage and part of the Matsu area. We have had a very long, productive relationship with the Alaska Railroad. You might even say we've had probably the longest relationship in 1915 when the railroad started, maybe even as early as 1912 when the surveyors started to look at how to connect the railroad up north. The Eklutna people were all around the area, including at Ship Creek with our main winter village out at Eklutna. We have many elders and many who have since passed that were some of the very early employees for the Alaska Railroad, and a long relationship with the native village of Eklutna with the Alaska Railroad. We are a supporter of this bill. Many know us as one of the largest private landowners in Anchorage. We have had some really great conversations in the past. We have supported federal grants that the railroad has gone after, and some have received for maintenance of the railroad, new rail spurs. We've even had situations where the railroad has supported the native village of Eklutna's powwow. One year we had National Congress of American Indians, a big convention in Alaska, and the railroad coordinated a train, which we were able to bring tribes from all around the United States out to Eklutna for the powwow. So I just want to put a plug in for a lot of their civic side of the railroad. We have been in discussions in the past about potential exchanges where the railroad has an industrial footprint in Anchorage where they're looking at maybe possibly redeveloping, and there's been a history out at Birchwood and out at Eklutna where some of that industrial footprint might be able to be expanded. Our board of directors have in the past met with the railroad board of directors. We've even had lunches together to nurture that relationship. I can make a couple points from the private side. Real estate deals do sometimes go more than a year. Sometimes they take as long as 2 to 3 years. One example is Eklutna supporting MEA bringing in a new power plant out across from Eklutna. That was almost a three-year conversation. A lot of logistics, a lot of research. Private parties have board of directors as well, so we have our own processes and steps. So I understand why in 1 year you just can't always get a deal done. And for the flexibility, I think, is what this bill brings to the railroad. We have worked with many of the long-term staffers at the railroad. Their real estate department is deep. Their bench is deep. A lot of seasoned folks over there. Same on our side. We have met with the CEO of the railroad and the chair and feel very good and comfortable about the conversations and what their intent is. Saying that, we also appreciate the sponsor, Senator Coghill, and on the House side, Representative Wilson Thompson. We are a major stakeholder, and I would say the railroad is a major stakeholder in what Eklutna does. Infrastructure-wise, Most folks know that anything that connects Fairbanks to Anchorage or goes through the Mat-Su and Anchorage often goes through Eklutna. So from roads and bridges and rail lines to gas and water and fiber optics. So we have a lot of experience with infrastructure, but moreover, when it comes to private development, if that infrastructure is not in place, or it's going to take quite a bit of money or time, often that real estate doesn't get developed. To have the railroad actually be a little bit more proactive in their thinking as far as adjacent to a lot of private landowners and demonstrating to us that they can have serious conversations, that they can sit down at the table and maybe make something happen without always having to go down to the legislature. On the private side, time is money. We don't have the luxury often of waiting for full legislative cycles on the private side. So that was one of the reasons we support it. We also support the sunset clause, meaning that no different than us reporting to shareholders. When you introduce a new concept and you give the owners of your organization some time to watch it play out, and if they don't like what they're seeing or they want to make some adjustments in a matter of 24 to 36 months, you can parachute in. I think that gives a lot of people the flexibility to kind of watch and learn and let good people prove themselves. And so with that, Madam Chair, I'll make myself available for any questions regarding the CLUDA.
Are there questions from committee members? Curtis, thank you for joining us at Senate Finance today, and tell everybody hello at home.
I sure will. Thank you very much.
The next person waiting to testify is Evelyn Arnott from the Greater Fairbanks Board of Realtors. Ms. Arnott, are you there?
I am. Thank you.
Welcome to Senate Finance. Your testimony, please.
I'm the president of the Greater Fairbanks Board of Realtors, and we are in support of this bill. We believe that it will help in a lot of ways in our area. One is we have limited land that's available for sale, especially on the river, and so this allows homeowners to take advantage of a nice piece of land that they could build their dream home on. It also provides jobs, both for our local builders and the contractors around. So we also believe that this land will also increase for our local taxes as well. So we, as realtors, are in support.
Thank you very much. Are there questions from committee members? Ms. Arnott, did I didn't mean to cut you off. Did you have other comments?
No, thank you.
Thank you. Thank you for testifying before Senate Finance today. The next person waiting to testify is Tim Worthen, Premier Anchorage, Premier Alaska Tours. Mr. Worthen, welcome to Senate Finance.
Yes, hello, Madam Co-Chair. This is Tim Worthen, and I'm from Anchorage, but have a tour business, Premier Alaska Tours, that goes throughout the state. We currently have about 600 employees, 100 buses. We have four rail cars, double-deckers, that we put on the Alaska Railroad, and they tow them. We have a leased land with the railroad in Anchorage for our rail maintenance operation. And we give the railroad about $1 million a year in business. Through Denali, it's very important to us in the travel industry, and so we move 1,000 to 1,500 people a day. We're the largest Alaskan-owned tour company up there. Holland & Princess is a little bigger than us, but we're the second largest on the overall movement of people throughout Alaska. So in Denali on a particular night, we'll have up to 750 rooms, hotel rooms in usage. We'll have maybe 50 rooms for staff. So we have a lot of big needs around Alaska from a travel industry standpoint. My business partner and I also own a lot of land in Anchorage and Fairbanks for our commercial operations and other parts of the state for other purposes. So I've done some development. I've done a lot of real estate over my life. And it properly do a project, you really have to loan land for me to be, or I have to own the land to be able to get proper financing. So we're looking at a large parcel in Healy, and I've been just looking around at different land and researching. So I approached the railroad on a big Healy parcel that abuts a lake. I think it would be a good resort-type destination, so we're looking to acquire that parcel. But then I'll probably invest up to $30 million over a number of years in either putting in motor coach parking area, employee housing area. I need like 50 rooms just for that, and then a hotel, which I can immediately fill with my own clients that currently go through Denali right now. But, again, if I can't own the land, it's very difficult to finance it. And I'm a private party who does land stuff, and I'm just not going to invest that type of money into a piece of property without having ownership of the land to develop it the way I want to develop it. I believe it'll be very beneficial to the railroad, and that more tourism through Denali means they'll also fill more of their rail cars and make more money that way. They'll make more money off of all the adjacent 1,000 acres of land and Healy that's really surplus to them that they could use, you know, for other real estate developments. Once a nice resort development goes in, all the land around it's going to be worth a lot more. So I just encourage that you pass this bill. Back in my youth, I worked for the railroad from 1985 to 1990. I went with Frank Turpin over there from Alyeska Pipeline. I was an internal auditor. And one of the key things Mr. Turpin told me as we went over there is, as my auditor, I want you to go through every single department and make them think corporate thinking, make them think, you know, business world. This is not a government entity anymore in mental thinking. And because under the feds, they just lost money and it just didn't matter. So there's a real need for the railroad to be able to continue that type of thinking process. You've got a good board with a bunch of good business people like John Cook, who's talking today. And so I would just encourage the support of that board, which you have a couple of commissioners on there to kind of keep an eye on things to ensure they're going the right direction, but give them the ability to do deals, because I'm a deal maker, and I'm just going through a whole process of ending up at the legislature and the governor to try to approve every type of real estate deal discourages me. But I'm making an attempt this time. But there are other land options. There's other things. So if it doesn't go through, I'll be fine. But I just think it's good for the railroad if this progresses. So available for any questions, and thank you for giving me the opportunity to speak.
Thank you for those comments. Are there questions from committee members? Mr. Worthen, thank you for calling in to testify today.
Thank you.
Is there anyone else wishing to testify on Senate Bill 86, an act relating to the sale or other disposal, leasing, or encumbrance of Alaska Railroad Corporation land and providing for an effective date? Seeing and hearing none, the public hearing is closed. Committee members, are there other questions before I start a series?
I have one.
Senator Hoffman.
Thank you, Madam Chair. What is the status of the rights to subsurface? Is that anticipated to be sold with these parcels, or is it a separate issue? Subsurface rights.
Mr. Cook.
Through the chair, Senator Hoffman, we've got our legal counsel on that can speak to subsurface rights, Andy Barron.
Mr. Barron, if you could identify yourself for the record and let us know if you heard Senator Hoffman's question and identify yourself.
Thank you, Madam Chair. This is Andy Barron, B-E-H-R-E-N-D. I'm the chief counsel at the Alaska Railroad Corporation. And yes, I did hear Senator Hoffman's question. In terms of mineral rights, for the most part, where we own the land in fee simple, which is, you know, there's been some discussion of that as to the right-of-way, but as to non-right-of-way, we hold the entire federal interest that's come over to us in the transfer from the Federal Railroad, and that includes mineral rights. So where we do own the fee simple title, we do own the mineral rights. And as I understand, it's a little hard to know. It would depend on each individual transaction, but we do have those rights to sell. And as I understand it, typically we would sell those rights where we have them.
Mr. Cook, Senator Hoppen, follow up.
Thank you. And will those mineral rights be specifically identified of which ones would be assumed to be transferred?
I assume that they would. You know, that would be a determination to be made by the board when the transactions were approved. But that would be typical that we would identify whether it was, you know, full fee simple, which would include the mineral rights. I don't know if those would be separately identified. If there was any issue as to what was being conveyed in terms of the mineral rights, or any subset of the mineral rights being conveyed, then we would certainly, those would be identified in the transactional documents and the conveyances.
Senator Hoffman.
And the other question that I have, because it's been interpreted different ways from the railroad's viewpoint, is gravel considered surface or subsurface rights?
Well, typically gravel would be considered subsurface rights. Our standard approach to gravel, this is aside from any sales transactions of the land, our typical approach to gravel is that we issue a license for gravel to be excavated, and we have to give public notice of that and enter into what is typically, well, the prices are set based off of, I believe it's DOT's prices. So we consider it subsurface and treat it as such when we do those types of licenses to excavate gravel.
Thank you, Madam Chair. My question is, when we're considering selling land with subsurface rights, an individual could bypass that whole process and buy large parcels, and they would receive the gravel and then be able to sell it. Isn't that correct?
I think that would be correct, and I would assume this is a question more for our real estate people, but you know, that would be part of the appraised value of the property.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Senator Hoffman. Other questions from committee members? Senator Bishop.
Yes, thank you, Madam Chair. I might have missed this earlier, but of the 36,000 acres, I don't know, this could be for Mr. Cook or Andy, either one. So that the remaining 18,000 acres that's for lease or sale, how much is that is fee simple? Do we know?
Through the chair, Senator Bishop, the vast majority of the railroad's property is fee simple. It's a very small minority, mainly through you know, Anchorage and Fairmix in those areas, or Denali Park, that's not fee simple. Just one other comment as well with regard to Senator Hoffman's question regarding subsurface rights, is we're definitely familiar with those from up in, I live up in Senator Bishop's world, and have owned patented mining claims. It's very similar to that with the Alaska Railroad. But in terms of selling any properties with potential mineral bearings, and I've sold gravel personally a lot over my own life, you know, that would be definitely accounted for were we to do, you know, if the highest and best use of that property was a gravel pit, the mineral potential would definitely be you know, looked at where we'd ever contemplate a sale of any properties with mineral bearing potential.
Follow up, Senator Bishop. Mr. Cook, Mr. O'Leary, possibly Mr. Brennan. The first question is the disposal process. Is there anything else that we need to put on the record for fair market value, best interest finding, And I believe you stated or instead of and versus the appraisal process so that the public can follow this particular conversation. So if you would just restate on the record the process that you would go through as a board to determine value for the railroad, our understanding of what you're telling us is investment in other railroad property with those proceeds. But tell us the process that the general public might see the railroad enter into.
Yes, Madam Chair. The process, as I would envision it, there's two different paths you can look at. One is property that we would advertise for sale. The other is folks that would come to us looking to purchase properties. And again, the types of properties we've outlined are parcels that are currently not leased, that haven't been monetized, or say de minimis parcels. But under either of these scenarios, the railroad would enter into a purchase and sale agreement with that individual. There would be, prior to that, it would either be, there'd be an appraisal done if it was not a parcel that we'd advertised. And if it was a parcel that we had advertised, it would be a competitive bid process. So we put a list price out there. We'd see what the competitive bids come in at. If it's above, we accept it. If it's not, we have a decision to make. But neither of those cases, either an appraisal or a competitive bid process, once a purchase and sale agreement signed, that would trigger the public notice requirements. And, we'd follow those public notice requirements, and assuming there were no adverse public comments, we go ahead and close the sale. I would add that one of the things that we would have to do along the way is that it'd have to be there is a best interest finding that we have to go through in terms of disposing any of that property. So, again, whether we go let appraisal or competitive bid just depends on whether we're offering it up for sale or somebody comes to us in the street, public notice, and then close the deal.
Mr. Cook, is the board of directors then the approval of the best interest findings? Mr. O'Leary would present the findings and then the board would approve it?
Yes, Madam Chair, that is exactly what's currently required in statute, and we do nothing to change that.
Thank you. And we covered following up on Senator Hoffman, then, of the parcels that you have explained to this committee, most of them are fee simple, and it is the intent then to sell a fee simple property with subsurface rights?
Madam Chair, yes. For the parcels that we're talking about, with the exception of possibly Eddie Klutna, where you'd be, again, looking at there is gravel potential out in that area, so you'd look at that when you do the land exchange, and you'd value those rights to the extent there are any. But for a single-family home, doing a fee-simple bundle on everything is just, it's a simple way to go. There'd be no sense to try to sever the surface from the subsurface rights. So I would see most of it being transferring the full bundle of rights.
Mr. Cook, would that be the same in the Healy Reserve, which is the largest railroad reserve in the entire state, according to the Denali Borough, totaling 6,226 acres?
Yes, Madam Chair, it would be the same there. Again, the transactions that we're looking at in Healy have nothing to do with the mineral value of those properties, the two parcels that we're looking at selling. That would be the intent.
So from the Denali Borough's comments, they speak to multiple layers of land situations across the state, including in Healy. And specifically, they talk about the Tri-Valley Community Center, which houses medical clinics, firehouses, borough offices, banks, and the state trooper station sitting on leased land. Do you know what I'm talking about?
Madam Chair, if it's in Tri-Valley Subdivision, yes, it is. It is sitting on leased land. If it isn't Tri-Valley Subdivision, that land is leased to Usabelli Coal Mine that then subleases that land to its individual tenant. So our tenant is Usabelli Coal Mine.
So would we propose to sell that property also, or is that just a lease?
But we're in discussions. I think the intent, with sublessees being there, our intent where we'd enter into that transaction would be to sell that to Usabelli, and they would then conduct those sales with the individual landowners. Not everyone will want to maybe purchase the land that they're on, so letting them work through that process and be fair. Most of the folks that are on there are either current or former, you know, Usabelli employees. So letting them manage that process on an individual basis makes the most sense, I think, for us and for Usabelli.
Mr. Cook, we wouldn't have a rider on any of the sales agreements there. We would be fee simple and out of the transaction, so it would be between the new owner and any property that is sold going forward for them to establish terms.
Madam Chair, yes. But though I would say that I think there's some special circumstances in Tri-Valley that Commissioner Bishop can probably speak to this better than I can, but I think there was an agreement when Tri-Valley was established, it was to move folks out of the SunTrana area, and I think that Usabelli, you know, were they to go ahead and recoup that, is allowed only to recoup their investment and some reasonable holding costs. So, you know, I think they've shown themselves to be a very good corporate citizen, and again, I just can't imagine they're just looking to take care of their folks and not profit on the deal just to get their investments back.
Thank you, Mr. Cook. Talking about the fee simple and the federal interaction of lands that came to the railroad via the federal government, does the federal government retain any restriction on those properties, or you can do as a railroad corporation whatever you need to do? There's no barrier in place that you can't move forward with actually selling assets?
Madam Chair, no. The only place, again, that we've seen that you know, we would not sell and that we're barred either in statute is areas that are, you know, the right-of-way and essential for railroad operations. So, again, that's why out of 36,000 acres, about 18,000 between terminal reserves, right-of-way, other things like that, it's not on the table and it will not be on the table.
Mr. Cook, you bring up an interesting point, essential for railroad operations as far as right-of-way goes. Can you sell right-of-way that's not essential?
We can't sell right away, period. So I guess I should say it's you know, right away we can't sell at all. Essential for operations would be things like terminal reserves, sidings, things like that may fall outside the right away shops.
Senator Michicki.
So I don't have a list of transactions that have occurred, but has there been sales in the past that were, I see a transfer with a Kloutna. Have there been sales of Alaska Railroad land in the past?
Through the Sierra, Senator Michicki, I have got the list in here as well. And other than to DOT or other governmental entities, I am not aware of any other sales of land that have occurred since the state's owned the railroad for 30 plus years.
Madam Chair.
Senator Michicki.
I had a wise statesman in my office the other day that kept warning me about the life lesson of never touching the principal. And your other transfers, therefore, did not result in the loss of subsurface. How much of Alaska Railroad lands of those 18,000 acres have we? Is there any seismic work done? Do we have any indication of the potential, other than gravel, value of those minerals?
Through the chair, Senator Michicki, I am not aware of, you know, any information that we have other than for gravel and hard rock reserves, you know, of any other mineral potential on our properties. I would say that the majority of the properties that we're looking to sell are in, you know, urban areas or you know, near the highway and Walhealy. It's not all of Healy and not all of 6,000 acres is by any means urban, at least the portion that we're looking at between Tri-Valley and the Otto Lake Hotel is kind of core Healy areas that I just can't see ever being developed for mineral potential.
Senator Michicki?
I can tell you right now that worries me on the subsurface disposal more so than the sale of the land. I'm curious why you didn't bring a bill forward this year, since you had you have supporters from the district. You would have supporters with us on an individual piece of property that you're thinking about selling. because I can tell you right now I would have amended the subsurface other than gravel if I had the opportunity as a legislator. We don't know what the future holds, and that could be substantial value, much higher than any other commercial value of railroad property. So I'm worried about that a little bit. I'll just be perfectly frank with you. But why did you not bring that forward this year on that sale that obviously has been working its way through the process for some time on that particular piece?
Through the chair, Senator Machicki, first to answer your concerns or to address your concerns regarding, you know, subsurface's potential and some of the other concerns that have been raised. You know, it's one of the reasons, again, that we agreed to a three-year sunset. You know, looking at selling vast acreages of remote parcels is not something that we're looking to do. We're looking to try to monetize parcels that are already subdivided or easily subdividable. And, you know, look at that potential. I guess folks that wanted to look at subsurface potential or other things, you know, the railroad's been around a long time, and there's a lot of private sector folks that may do that. But it's not our intent to pursue those types of transactions. We're looking to try to monetize lands that have never been, you know, monetized. You know, the subdivision in Fairbanks, the railroad made the investment 21 years ago. It's received zero return on that investment. You know, if we would have had $3 million, which is what I think this first 13 acres will bring in, if we would have had that, you know, 21 years ago, it would spin off an 8% return that would grow 2% per annum. You can't get back the lost money. I mean, the time value of money in terms of, you know, monetizing some of these things, I guess it just, you know, can't be underestimated. As far as bringing individual transactions, again, that's the process that's been there, but it just, it's, to me, the proofs, I guess, in the numbers, and that, you know, most private sector folks, when you tell them that there's going to be a legislative process involved, it's very daunting to them. And even in the instance where we've done deals, you know, this year, for example, you know, at Chena Landings, we have minimal earnest money and refund provisions that have had to been, you know, had to be put in. So to get folks to go out and spend a lot of money doing due diligence and spending money to look at whether they want to buy something and have it potentially not close is something that I think is just a deterrent. And again, this is a very, you know, it's a very, you know, reasonable body and supportive of business, but it's just it's uncertainty when you're making big investments. It's very difficult for people to move forward. And
Senator Bishop.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Mr. Cook, I just want to get clear on the record. A comment that you made along with answering Senator Machicki's questions on subsurface. So you said hard rock. So I want to be clear, we're talking about hard aggregate and not a hard rock mineral potential, i.e. gold or silver, correct?
To the chair, Senator Bishop, you are absolutely correct. It's hard rock in terms of armor rock and other hard rocks for aggregate purposes only, not gold.
Senator Machicki, follow up.
At my point, you compare yourself with the other agencies, but the other agencies do not relinquish subsurface rights, to my knowledge. So that's, again, a struggle, and I will be doing that research. But as far as I know, that when DNR and DOT and other state entities relinquish ownership, it stops at the surface from my knowledge on the subject so far. And if I'm wrong, I'll certainly retract that statement. But anyway.
Senator Machicki will have a follow-up with my staff with the railroad to see if that comparison is accurate. I have a few other questions. On the 90-day timeline for exercising the right of first refusal for a leaseholder in the sponsor statement, do you think that that is an adequate time when you're telling us for you to put together a project, it takes, you know, anywhere from a year to 3 years, depending on the complexity of the process. If we're looking at presenting an opportunity to sell a piece of property and then giving a right of first refusal to someone who's happily doing their business, is 90 days a long enough period to exercise a first right of refusal for a current leaseholder?
Uh, Chair McKinnon, yeah, first off, I guess I would state that it is not our intent to unwillingly sell land that's currently leased by an existing leaseholder. We don't have any intention, you know, of doing that. The 90-day number in terms of financing a piece of ground, if there is an existing leaseholder on there, you know, they potentially have their building already financed and they have a financing that's in place. 90 days, I guess, in terms of going out and getting a loan to purchase the land portion of it, would seem reasonable in terms of going, getting the approval done, getting an appraisal done if they need it for financing. I mean, typically 90 days would be enough to obtain financing, which is really all that we're doing, is giving them a chance to either write a check or obtain, you know, financing. Secondly, there's nothing that binds us to not going beyond 90 days for that to happen, so that can always be mutually extended. But first off, again, it is not going to be the policy of our board to sell land that is currently leased unless it is that individual that starts the process. They start the process and they want to buy it, then that's a different story. So again, it's just not going to be our policy to do that against our current existing lessees.
Mr. Cook, I appreciate your leadership on the board as president and know that that you have the best intentions going forward, but you're not always the chair, and other people can take those leadership roles. And when we start to turn over the reins, we are subject to future appointments and the will of the current administration. So I just note that for the record, that once we allow a pilot program to go forward as the concept now of this particular proposal, the legislature is out of the loop for a period of 3 years that the board and its leadership and the administration can do most anything that they want with that property without the legislature, except through statutory language coming back in and changing that. With that said, as I understand it, you have $17 billion worth of bonding authority on your books from the stranded gas pipeline, where you could extend bonds. Well, I guess the question is for your legal. Are those bonds still on the books, and can the railroad exercise use of that bonding authority for a gas pipeline, or is there some stipulation on the language that was passed on that $17 billion to not allow its use today? Mr. O'Leary.
Senator McKinnon, so the $17 billion authorization that was given to the railroad, I think back in the 2001-2002 timeframe, is designed that the railroad could access its abilities. We sort of jokingly refer to them as sort of our superpowers, to use a special bonding authority to gain advantage, perhaps, for the gas pipeline through using tax-exempt financing. There's a stipulation in the current language on the books which says it can only be used if there is an agreement with a third party to effectively pay that debt service over the term of those bonds. And to the best of my knowledge, that authorization still exists currently.
Thank you. So putting out for the committee, that third party could be a partner that is currently in at least negotiations with the state that could trigger this particular bonding authority. It is not the railroad's intention right now. They at least... through questioning when I had them in my office, there is no current activity that the board knows about. Chairman Cook, is that accurate?
Chairman McKinnon, that is accurate.
But this bill would provide no oversight for 3 years with that bonding authority on the books. And we know the governor is seeking $11 billion, at least that's the number that I've heard of late, that would be the state's share. And so I just throw that out as a cautionary tale in not having any oversight going forward. And quite frankly, that bonding authority exists with or without our approval, Mr. O'Leary.
Chair, the bonding authority, again, was put out there, and I believe it could be used at this point, subject to that third-party agreement.
So for the sponsor, I don't know if this title could incorporate the elimination of that bonding authority, but I certainly am concerned that it's out there and that if we gave away some kind of rights for a pilot period over these next 3 years, that that could be triggered with a stroke of the pen by the governor of the state of Alaska. So I just throw that out as a cautionary tale. We're trying to understand partners that are international, that are looking to engage in both using and providing stable energy for their country, which I applaud a collaborative effort going forward, and would love to see the financing that looks like, so that I can understand as a finance committee co-chairman the value to Alaska and a value to that potential partner. So I certainly am open to those discussions, but for this particular bill, there's bonding authority that's out there under the umbrella for the railroad. Mr. Cook, we've heard the administration move forward on a commuter rail, and I am wondering from a revenue decline perspective. So earlier in the conversation today, both you and I believe it was you, Mr. Cook, talked about a revenue decline with the loss of the coal contracts coming out of Healy. Is that accurate?
Chair McKinnon, yeah, that and
Flint Hills
and just the slowdown on the North Slope in terms of barge traffic, yes.
So I know there's huge support both in the Mat-Su area, Palmer, and Eagle River Chugiak about commuting into Anchorage. And I have been to this rodeo before, about 10 years ago, where I've looked at the studies and the costs that were over, I believe the passenger cost was over $10 each way, I believe, on that commuter rail. And I'm just wondering how commuter rails function on the same track with aggregate being moved. And, you know, what's the timing issue there, the safety issue? It seems to me that it would require unique timing to be able to accommodate a commuter rail and then still provide the revenue for the aggregate to move that actually is a pretty good revenue producer for the railroad.
Chair McKinnon, yes, as you aptly stated, commuter rail has been talked about for decades at this particular point, and there's been a resurgence in interest of late. I believe Governor Walker's administration issued an administrative order creating a commuter rail task force that my understanding the first meeting of is going to be later on this week, and charged with taking a look at what it would take to put commuter rail service in between the Mat-Su Valley and Anchorage. So I think there will be significant work done on that. There are some deliverable dates, I believe, in end of May, as well as a final report due by, I believe, September. I'm not entirely clear on that. Commuter rail is challenging, there is no doubt. It is something that would require funding certainly that is outside of the level that the Alaska Railroad could ever hope to provide. All commuter rail activities in the United States are subsidized, many subsidized heavily, most subsidized heavily. With regard to your specific question about timing, you know, we do have, for the most part, with a couple of exceptions, we have double track, but for the most part, we are a single track railroad. And so that track time for commuter would compete with our other activities out there, freight and other passenger. As currently thought of, but again, the commuter rail group has not met yet, we would be looking at a seasonal demonstration project. So it would not conflict necessarily with our gravel moves as currently envisioned. There would be some ballet that would need to occur to make sure it how it impacted our other Anchorage freight activities.
Thank you for those comments. I did not receive an invitation, to my knowledge, to attend that task force meeting, considering that I had worked through that as an advocate almost 10 years ago. I might have some value to add to the conversation about how cost-effective it is not. So just put that out for the administration to see if they're listening. Is there any other questions from the committee on Senate Bill 86?
Just one.
Senator Bishop.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Is there any land still outstanding transfer from the feds to us, this Alaska Railroad?
Through the Chair, Senator Bishop, I don't believe there's anything that has to still be transferred. I believe there may still be some final paperwork to be done on the patents. But again, probably turn it to Andy Barron, our Chief Counsel, if that's acceptable, to give you probably a better answer on that.
That's fine, and I don't have to have it today either if they don't know.
Mr. Behrens, do you have the answer to Senator Bishop's question or a partial answer?
I might have a partial answer. Our land services people, real estate people, would be able to give better answers, but there are a few. We have, through interim conveyances, which all of which were given in 1985, all of the properties been conveyed. The process under the statute, the federal statute transferring the railroad, required then for those areas that hadn't been surveyed, that surveys be issued, and then final patents issued. Almost all of that is done. I think there is something on the neighborhood of between 1% and 3% of the property where we're still waiting for final patents. Of that, I know that some of them are on the airport, the Anchorage Airport branch, which is currently under survey by BLM, so that's awaiting the final surveys and the reviews of the federal lawyers so that the final patents can be issued. There are a few stray lots in South Anchorage that where lots were purchased by the federal government to reconstitute the right-of-way after the 1964 earthquake. Some of those patents have been issued, and some of them are in process. There may be others, and we could certainly have our land services people pull together a better, fuller description.
Thank you.
Thank you, Senator Bishop. Thank you, Mr. Behrens. We would like to see that, if you could get the answer to that particular question. Senator Bishop, if I could have you look at the fiscal note.
Thank you, Madam Chair. fiscal note, Department of Commerce, Community and Economic Development, Appropriations, Alaska Railroad Corporation, OMB, component number is zero, and there is a zero analysis. Alaska Railroad Corporation is exempt from the Executive Budget Act. The Alaska Railroad does not require additional financial authorization as a result of this legislation.
Are there questions on the fiscal note for the CEO or the chairman? Seeing and hearing none, we'll set this bill aside. On tomorrow's calendar, Tuesday, March 6, 2018, here in Senate Finance Room 532 in Alaska State Capitol, we'll be hearing SB 155, Real Estate Appraisal Management Companies, and HB 131, Relocation Assistance for Federal Projects and Programs. Is there anything else to come before the committee? If not, we're adjourned.